CAAV podcast. The government recently announced that the delayed sustainable farming incentive will open for applications on the 18th of September. As basic payments are phased out, it will be important for farmers to access funding through this scheme, which offers public payment for public goods, namely environmental services. So what type of land management is eligible for funding, and how can farmers access the scheme? Richard Sanders, Technical and Policy Advisor at the CAAV, joins me to explain. So Richard, could you just start by setting the scene and explaining how the SFI differs from previous schemes, please?
The Sustainable Farming Incentive, so the SFI, is one of those key schemes that are coming through in England to replace what was available under the previous European Common Agricultural Policy. And as we've gone on since 2019 and these schemes have been developing, it seems to have become more central to the government's support for farmers and land managers. And we're talking just about England today, as the other devolved nations are putting in place their own policies and schemes as well. This is going to be a bit of a bumper episode, but this really gives us a chance to look at the SFI in a bit of detail. Everyone will now be familiar with the broad shape of the agricultural transition, so that movement from 2019 into these new schemes. We've done several podcasts on the developing schemes, so have a scroll down the lists wherever you got this podcast, and you can pick up some of the history of their development there. In essence, the basic payment scheme, BPS, is being phased out, and that's going to be gone in full by 2027. BPS saw payments to farmers and land managers primarily because they were occupying land in return for what's been seen as fairly lightweight environmental obligations under cross-compliance. And so, with that opportunity to take a fresh approach after Brexit, the government wanted instead to focus on what it called public money for public goods. So they're after that something for something, giving payments for environmental improvement, as you mentioned earlier. The SFI is the more accessible of these new environmental schemes that are coming in to replace BPS. The idea is it'll fund things that can be done whilst farming. And in many cases, the actions of the SFI, and I'm going to look at a couple of these later, may be complementary to farming as well. For example, better nutrient management and things like integrated pest management too. Starting at that sort of higher policy level, there were three main agri-environment schemes proposed as part of the post-Brexit agricultural transition. We have the SFI, there was the local nature recovery scheme, and then also the landscape recovery scheme. It's a bit of a generalization, but broadly here, the ambition and therefore the change required increases as you work up from one to the other. Alongside these schemes, there were then a range of productivity grants, as well as the FIPL scheme, which was a bit of a bridging scheme as the new ones come through. Together, these new agri-environment schemes were known as ELMs, or the Environmental Land Management Schemes. That term has slipped away a bit now, but it still gets used, and I find it can be useful when talking about the schemes as a group, and because people are still referring to it, it's important that we have a bit of an idea about what we're talking about when that gets used. Listeners will be aware that the Local Nature Recovery Scheme is no more. During the development of that scheme, DEFRA took the view that it was better, instead of creating a new scheme from scratch, to build on what was already in place and therefore familiar to farmers and land managers. And so they're instead proposing to expand and enhance the Countryside Stewardship Scheme, and that's going to be going on from next year. So with that background, that sort of high level view of what we've got in place and where the SFI fits, I want to make a few key points at the top here. The first is that DEFRA has been working and we've been feeding into this process to make these schemes more accessible. And this can be seen in the detail of the guidance and the sort of number of events and webinars that they're holding. Some listeners may have been on the webinars that they've been holding recently. There was one on the 6th of September. The guidance for the SFI is now published as a PDF handbook. Again, something that we and others have been pushing for. That handbook's intended to be the hard detail of the scheme and therefore should be the first stop for those looking for guidance. You know, take a look, run through, see what it says in there, have a search in that document if you're unsure about anything. Applications are going to be done through the online rural payment service portal. So in theory, that makes them more simple and a bit more automated. In practical terms, this means that it's important to make sure that the details of the business and maps and land use and those sorts of things are up to date before an application is started. So get your consents in place, check the land, and then be submitting any RLE1 forms as needed before starting the application. We'll look at the application process a little bit. I'll talk over this in a minute. There's also a new approach to checks and enforcements, with more of a focus on outcomes and therefore a bit more flexibility for agreement holders. You know, this is quite a noted change from the prescriptive approach under the previous schemes, and hopefully will be seen as a positive thing for most of those taking up these agreements. We wait to see quite how this works in practice, but as I've said, more focused on the outcomes and more focused then on meeting the spirit of the scheme and doing our best to achieve the aims.
Now, SFI has been around in pilots and earlier versions for a few years now. What's new for 2023?
So as you say, there've been a couple of steps to get us to where we are for SFI 2023. The main change, I think, and the one that requires a bit of a shift in thinking is the change in the structure of the scheme. So for the SFI pilot and for the 2022 scheme, applicants selected what were called standards. So these were sets of actions for a particular land type. You then committed to a certain level for that standard. As the level increases, so does the ambition and therefore the management obligations, and then the payment rates go up as well as you go up the levels. So I'm not going to dwell on these past years for too long, as I don't want to get myself muddled with the details of the 2023 scheme and then the details of the previous schemes as well. While reviewing the feedback and then watching the operation of those earlier versions of the SFI, DEFRA decided that it was better to do away with that structure of standards and levels. And so in place of that, we now have a more pick and mix approach. And that's going to be more familiar to those who've done countryside stewardship applications in the past. So for SFI 2023, applicants will commit to a certain number of actions across a chosen area of their land. Each action has a code. So again, thinking about countryside stewardship here, and then those actions are grouped by land type. So actions for arable and horticultural land, actions for permanent pasture, actions for moorland, actions for hedgerows, and those sorts of things. And there are also some universal whole farm actions, such as preparing a nutrient management plan. There are, of course, some people already in the SFI under that previous structure that was there for 2022 and for the pilot. For those with an SFI 2022 agreement, DEFRA has taken the view that the best approach is to start again with a blank slate, allowing them the opportunity to go in for the more flexible pick and mix approach for SFI 2023. So they're ending all of those SFI 2022 agreements. Those with a 2022 agreement will have received a letter from the RPA detailing how they will close out the agreements. So those agreement holders will not have to repay any money they've received already, and they might also receive a lump sum closure payment to cover financial loss and for any management payments that they're going to be owed under that agreement as well. So anyone in that position, check their correspondence with the RPA to see what they've been offered.
No doubt we'll be looking at some of the specific SFI actions later, but for now, let's get into the detail of the scheme itself. For starters, how long will the agreements last?
So an SFI agreement is going to be for 3 years. And during the 3 years of the agreement holder may decide that actually, you know, they're getting on pretty well and they want to up their ambition, they want to do a bit more. So at the end of the first or second year of the agreement, you can then choose to add more actions. You can't go the other way, however, I mean, that's important to note here. So no scaling down without a good reason. We've also been told that when more actions are announced for 2024 and going forwards, a bit more variety of stuff coming through, then these will be able to be added to the existing agreements. And we wait to see what's announced and how that's all going to work.
So how does this work for tenants? Do they need to have a tenancy for the full length of the agreement?
In order to make the scheme more accessible, and many listeners will be aware of the work of Baroness Rock and the Rock Review and tenants' access to schemes and all those sorts of questions as well. But for the SFI, DEFRA has made some allowances for those with tenancy agreements or built in a bit of flexibility. So the starting point is that tenants should expect to have management control for the 3 year duration of the agreement. So what that means in practice is that maybe they've got an FBT that was granted for 2 years or more, and then they expect that to roll onto an annual periodic basis that's going to give them that 3 year coverage. If they've had an FBT granted for fewer than 2 years, but then they're expecting the landlord to renew it and give them the required period of control, that's also going to meet their expectation. And then when they've got an AHA agreement and there's no imminent threat of a notice to quit and no risk of losing the tenancy, then that's also giving them the expectation that they can do the 3 years of the SFI. Where a tenant loses management control of the land midway through that 3 year period of the SFI, and that's due to unforeseen changing of circumstances that's outside of their control, then there may be no requirement to repay any funds received up until that point. Again, the detail of this is set out in the SFI handbook. So those thinking about the interaction of tenancies in the SFI, have a look at that section in that document. This is one example, and I'll come back to a couple of others later as well, of what I'm going to call the straight face test. The SFI is designed to be more flexible and therefore accessible than previous schemes. You know, so in that sense that I mentioned already, we're looking for outcomes rather than necessarily having this detailed list of requirements, and therefore we've got slightly lower barriers for entry rather than sort of hard requirements as we've seen under things like countryside stewardship. What this means is that applicants must demonstrate that they've tried their best to meet the aims of the scheme, and they should be confident in demonstrating this to the RPA. So this is what we've got for that tenancy requirement, that slight flexibility. Less of that hard five-year agreement requirement that we saw for the countryside stewardship scheme, but that softer expectation of having management control for 3 years. I think as a general point, sort of zooming out a little bit here, goes without saying that in all circumstances, you know, not just for the SFI, tenants and landlords are encouraged to be having those regular discussions about the plans for the long term of the holding and, you know, what the intentions of both parties are and what they're looking at here as well. Beyond the three-year requirement for SFI, there's going to be this secondary question here, also for tenancies, which is, does the tenancy agreement enable the tenant to meet those obligations of the SFI? You know, are there any particular terms in that agreement that could prevent the tenant taking the required actions under SFI? You know, as mentioned, SFI is really targeted at those things that can be done alongside farming or those things that are compatible with agriculture. However, it's still really important to check that the tenants have the scope to deliver the scheme. It's a bit of a wider discussion, but some listeners will be aware that amendments made by the Agriculture Act 2020 allowed tenants under an AHA to apply to the tribunal for a variation of the terms of their agreement in order to enable them to enter into support schemes or to meet statutory requirements.
So what are the other eligibility requirements for the SFI? Is there a minimum size for the scheme?
So to be eligible, the applicant needs to have been a BPS eligible farmer on either 16th of May 2022 or 15th of May 2023. So the SBI needs to have had at least 5 hectares of eligible agricultural land on those dates and to have held at least 5 BPS entitlements. That said, a BPS claim does not need to have been made and the SBI does not need to have received the BPS in the past, just has to have been eligible on those dates. So the 2023 SFI is currently limited to those eligible businesses, as these businesses have their details registered with the RPA and the farm will be mapped and there'll be quite a bit within the system already from that point of view. That's going to cover the majority of holdings, but in the future, more farmers will be able to go into the scheme. DEFRA said they'll let us know how this is going to work in the future for those who haven't been BPS eligible in the past. If you've had the lump sum exit payment, and it's also unlikely you're going to be eligible for the SFI. Again, take a look at the guidance in the handbook if this might be relevant to you. And even though the business needs to have been BPS eligible in 2022 or 2023, and so you have that requirement that they need to have had at least 5 hectares of land to meet that eligibility, there's no bottom limit on the size of land going into the SFI scheme. So you can be putting less land in, but you just need to be hitting that eligibility threshold to go into the scheme in the first place. That said, on the flip side, there's also no maximum area. And finally, the SFI is going to be non-competitive. So if you're eligible and you meet the requirements, you can have an agreement if you want one.
Okay, so how does the application process work?
So the headline date here, and the one that everyone will be aware of, is 18th of September. And that's the official opening date for the SFI 2023. However, as in previous years, the RPA are undertaking what they call a controlled rollout of the scheme. So we're going to have things in stages, and the hope is that backlogs and delays and those sorts of things are avoided, and that any issues are flushed out early on, and that when people go to do their application, it's as smooth a process as possible. Some eligible applicants, in theory, those with applications that will be the simplest to process, have already been invited to register for early application. And once those expressing an interest have been processed, the applications then get opened more widely, starting with those farmers with less complex circumstances, and then moving on through the list to those with some complexity who are going to need some support from the RPA. So in the latter group, that's probably people like commoners or those managing shared grazing. Those with a bit of complexity to their applications and different things to balance and think about there. Once the scheme's opened, there's going to be a rolling application window. So no deadline closing in, none of that rush that we've had with previous schemes. If they need to close applications, the RPA is going to publish a notice of this. And so people have a bit of warning that that's going to be happening. A quick practical interlude here. This rolling application window also means that there's going to be rolling start dates. So there's going to be less of that mad May rush that people have been used to. However, the other side of that is that rolling start dates mean different start dates for agreements and different dates to keep an eye on. So a bit more management here. Back to the application process then. Applications are going to be submitted through the online rural payment service portal. Those who've done a countryside stewardship application this year, or those who went into SFI last year, will be familiar with how this looks. Applicants run through a checklist online, confirming their details and the information about the holding. And then when it comes to selecting parcels, there's going to be a map view of the holding of the farm in question of the land under the SBI. You select a parcel, and then you'll be able to tick the box for your chosen actions, stating how much of that parcel you want to put into that particular commitment. So we'll look at some detail of some actions later, but some of those options can be part parcel, some are whole parcels, some are sort of buffer strips, and there's also rotational options as well. As I've said, DEFRA and the RPA have been working to make this process as simple as they think they possibly can. There's guidance available online, and there's several videos on the RPA YouTube page. It's quite a useful resource, and that gives a run through of the process and those sorts of things. I'll go back to one of my headline points, you know, one of those key points that I mentioned at the start. This way of applying for the scheme means that the system needs to be much more front-loaded than previously before the applications are opened. So this means checking ahead that all the details are up to date, that the land's mapped correctly, that the land uses are identified correctly, and so on. Because of the setup of the system, your details are incorrect when the application is started. You know, that means you could run into challenges in completing and then submitting the application with a sort of knock-on and delays. For example, if your parcel's mapped as arable, then you're only going to have the arable options available when you go into the land viewer and look to select your actions.
So can you have another agreement like countryside stewardship or higher level stewardship alongside an SFI agreement?
So yeah, it's possible to have an SFI agreement and another agri-environment agreement on both the same holding and also in some cases, we've got some compatibility on the same parcels. In the SFI handbook, you know, that key document for this, there's a table for each of the actions setting out how it's compatible with countryside stewardship options and environmental stewardship options as well. The broad principle is that actions should be compatible. So for example, I can't be both avoiding cultivation and also planting a mixed species sward. You know, I've got to have some compatibility in what I'm actually doing on the ground. Therefore, I also don't want to be paying for the same things twice. So if I'm paid under CS for reducing nutrient inputs, then I can also receive funding for the same action under SFI. Yeah, that's known as double funding. As I've said, what's compatible on the same parcel is set out in detail in that SFI handbook. And what's double funding is quite intuitive. You know, we can see what we're being paid for under one scheme, so then it's clear what we shouldn't be paid for under the second scheme. This works both ways, of course, as well. So those who go into SFI this year can then also look at going into a countryside stewardship agreement in the future, but then they've got to have that compatibility and be thinking about double funding and those sorts of things as well. I think from an administrative point of view, the idea is that the online application portal is going to simplify this. So it's automatically going to remove the options and areas where schemes are in conflict. So if I've got a countryside stewardship agreement and there's an option for low input grassland, and I go in to apply for SFI and I go onto that parcel, you know, I'm not going to be able to apply for the low input grassland action under SFI. You know, it simply won't be there and be available to me.
That leads us really neatly onto some of the actions. So how can farmers best decide which to choose?
So DEFRA has published a range of resources for those wondering which actions are good for their business and to get an understanding of what's available here. We'll put some links to some of the materials discussed later in the podcast description on the CAV website. Those documents also get updated occasionally by the RPA, by DEFRA, so listeners should make sure that they're working from the latest version and the latest information. You know, the SFI handbook is now published as a PDF, as I've said, something that we've been pushing for repeatedly. And that has tracked versions, you know, tracked changes between the versions so that people can see what's changed. I think as a starting point for thinking about which actions to choose and what sort of how to put together a scheme, the SFI handbook has an overview table setting out which actions are suitable for which land types. And that table is also available online on the DEFRA website. There have also been sector-specific leaflets. We've published these on the websites. Again, we'll put a link in the notes to this podcast. These are handy, as then they go beyond the SFI and also set out the countryside stewardship options that are available. So they might tell you which actions are available for livestock farms, for example, or in the uplands or in arable farms, and what countryside stewardship looks like in those sorts of places as well. On the DEFRA website, there's also a series of guidance documents with titles such as SFI Actions for Farmland Wildlife on Improved Grassland. So you can come at it from this angle as well. As with any scheme that requires a change in business practice, so thinking slightly differently to the BPS scheme here, but thinking more about things like countryside stewardship and also the SFI under this, there's going to be a few ways to decide which options are right for the business in question. And I think the key point here is to consider the particular circumstances of that business in question. With BPS being withdrawn, some might be looking at the SFI as an alternative source of funding. So those people are going to be responding to the support that's available, see the support, and then plan what business changes to make. Others might have a plan for what they want to do on the holding, and then they're going to see what support is available out there to help them work towards that. Plan first, then the support that comes along with it. Of course, this is a sliding scale with plans made and changing on an adaptive basis, but we need to be thinking really about the business in question. What are the outcomes? What are the goals of that business?
So this is clearly very much not a one-size-fits-all type of process.
No, that's right. There's a bit of a selection and a bit of flexibility within it as well. And I suspect that some are going to find they're carrying out many of the actions on their land already. You know, and there's nothing to prevent those people entering into an SFI agreement, so long as that is, you know, I've talked about compatibility, and that they're not already being paid to do those things as part of another scheme. So what are we thinking of here? You know, we're thinking about things like low input grasslands, maybe herbal lays, you know, things that people may have already adopted for their own agricultural purposes. Some people may have seen the sort of modelling and reporting that's been done on the values available under SFI and, you know, what the reward might be for going into the schemes and how to put together a scheme and those sorts of things as well. These sums have then been sort of simplified into headlines and recommendations for certain actions. But we all know that life can be a bit more complicated than this, you know, when we come to look at certain businesses. And DEFRA reviews the payment rates for the schemes as well, as they want to encourage the uptake of their schemes. So again, looking at the business in question, thinking about its circumstances, and then how the scheme might fit to that particular business. Where the SFI actions could conflict with the current farming operation, maybe it could underpin a wider business change. So maybe the plan is anyway to work towards a bit of a lower input system in order to reduce some exposure to the costs that we've seen recently in things like feed and fertilizer. You know, maybe there's a market opportunity for selling produce with some added value. You know, thinking here about less intense livestock sold at a premium for quality and environmental goods and those sorts of things. You know, I'm not recommending either of these routes necessarily. Again, looking at the business in question and thinking about the goals and the sort of 5-year, 10-year plan of that business and how they're looking to move through the agricultural transition. And there's going to be as many answers as there are businesses. But this is the key role of members of the CAV, to provide that strategic advice to their clients. I think the final point here that I want to make is that it's important to remember the new focus of agri-environment schemes is this public money for public goods, something for something. So in practice, this means that expectations on the agreement holder have also gone up from the basic payment scheme. You know, agreement holders need to be doing their best to deliver the outcomes of the scheme. So it's all very well racking up an agreement that has a good headline payment value, but those actions are going to come with management obligations as well. And agreement holders should be careful that they're not biting off more than they can chew in delivering the scheme going forward.
Now, I understand that there are 23 actions in total for 2023, with more to come in the following years. So is everyone eligible for every action?
So it goes without saying that those looking at SFI should work through the handbook and familiarise themselves with all of the actions and their obligations before they decide which ones to take. As I've set out, We've got certain actions available depending on the land type, actions for hedgerows, universal actions, and then actions that can be applied to the whole holding. In terms of land type then, we've got arable, permanent crops, permanent grassland, and moorland. The actions available then target certain improvements on those land types, so soils, integrated pest management, wildlife, nutrient management, and those sorts of things. And as I've already mentioned, we have this new way of working to achieve the outcomes of the scheme. Actions have an aim, an outcome that we're working towards. There are then some basic requirements, but the agreement holder has a bit more flexibility on delivery. You know, we're coming back to that straight face test that I mentioned earlier. And in most cases, it's going to be fairly intuitive what constitutes a good attempt to meet the aims of the actions.
Let's start with arable land then. Can you talk us through some of the main actions available here?
So I'll pull out a few, and hopefully this will help us start to understand the focus and the structure of the scheme a bit as well. One action looking at soil improvement on arable land is multi-species winter cover crops, and that's got a code of SAM2. Here, we have a payment rate of £129 per hectare, and that action can be whole or part parcel, and it can also be rotational across the holding, or it can be static. So I've mentioned this structure of actions having aims and things that we should be working towards. And the aim for SAM2 is that there's a well-established multi-species cover crop over the winter months. The purpose of this is to protect the soil surface, provide root growth that benefits soil structure, support soil biology, and minimize nutrient leaching, soil erosion, and runoff. So then the handbook sets out some more details on the requirements of the action, things like timings and species mix. In the spirit of the new approach, beyond that baseline requirement, it's then quite up to the agreement holder how to decide how they complete the action and to ensure that they're keeping good evidence. Taking one for nutrient management on arable, we've got NUM3, which is a legume fallow. The payment rate for this is £593 per hectare, and the action can be done on the whole or part of a parcel, and again, can be rotational or it can be static. The aim for this one is to manage nutrient efficiency and improve soil health, provide food for farmland wildlife, such as pollen and nectar for pollinators and farmland birds, support an IPM approach by reducing grass weeds and, if located close to cropped areas, encourage natural crop pest predators. So again, quoting from the handbook there. And then we've got some baseline restrictions, no grazing on the established fallow, no fertilizer or manure application, no pesticide use, and some guidance on species mix. Taking just one more for arable land only, there's AHL4, which is a 4 to 12 metre buffer strip. This is static, so it can't be rotated across the holding, but it can be on just part of the parcel, or at least part of the boundary of a parcel. So the payment rate here is £451 per hectare, and then that's going to be a grass strip, buffering certain landscape or heritage features, things like hedges and streams and historic features as well. No fertilisers or pesticides can be applied, and it should not be in an area that's regularly used for vehicle movements and access, turning and storage and those sorts of things. Hopefully these three actions give a bit of a flavour of what's available on arable land. Some of this will look very familiar from countryside stewardship agreements in the past couple of years, but take a look at the handbook for more detail on what's available.
So how about grassland then? What actions do we have here?
There are slightly different actions available depending on if we're looking at improved or low input grassland here. For soils, so looking at soil improvement on improved grassland, agreement holders could go into SAM3, which is a herbal lay option. That's also available on arable land as well, so that's an arable compatible option. This can be rotational or static on all or part of a parcel, and the payment rate is £382 per hectare. There's an option for legumes on improved grassland, and that can be used on permanent improved grassland as well as temporary grass. That's NUM2. Again, rotational or static, available on whole or part parcel with a payment rate of £102 per hectare. There's an action to take field corners or blocks out of management, again, familiar from countryside stewardship in the past. So we've got IGL1, and that's £333 per hectare. And then there's also a winter bird food action, IGL2, paid at £474 per hectare. And then there's two low input grassland actions, one for SDAs, severely disadvantaged areas, and one for non-SDAs. Those are LIG1 and LIG2, both paid at £151 per hectare in both SDA and non-SDA areas as well. Those are for whole parcels. The requirements of these actions relate to things like fertilizer and manure application, as well as grazing management and minimizing bare ground. These are some of the actions where farmers may find that actually the SFI fits into their existing farming systems. And for those who've done countryside stewardship in the past or who've run countryside stewardship agreements in the past, those actions mentioned above are going to be quite familiar. And this is an indication of that increase in the ambition of the schemes as we move through the agricultural transition. So we can watch what was once in CS mid-tier moving into SFI, which is the more entry level of the new schemes.
You mentioned hedgerows and moorland. Can you talk about some of the actions available here?
So there's one action available for moorland, MOR1. And this is one of the options under the SFI that requires assessment and some preparations of reports and records instead of environmental intervention. Under the moorland action, applicants will need to survey the moorland that they manage in order to better understand how the moorland is providing environmental benefits and how it could provide more in the future. So that's going to require visiting a certain number of survey points on the moorland each year, and then identifying the land type, condition, and other features that may have the opportunity for nature improvements going forward. So maybe there are areas of dense bracken, eroding drainage ditches, or maybe some areas where there is the opportunity for some peatland restoration or some of those moorland-specific actions. From 2024 onwards, there's going to be more funding coming available to support that environmental improvement on moorland. And so this survey work is a bit of sort of preparatory work ahead of that. And any such survey work also supports those who might be interested in accessing other schemes. So thinking about the landscape recovery or maybe countryside stewardship here, or even those just looking to understand the moorland better for their own management. The action can be done by commoners on moorland, and it can be done on all land in another environmental scheme. So if your moorland's already in another environmental scheme, you can go into this SFI action on the land as well. That's because we've got no double funding here. You know, such a survey option isn't available from another grant. Records from that survey should be kept, but these don't need to be submitted to the RPA. We'd be told that they're not going to be used as information for enforcement as well. And nor does doing this survey tie anyone into taking up other options in the future. You know, instead it's about deepening that understanding of the condition of the moorland.
And hedgerows?
So there's a similar assessment option on hedgerows, HRW1. And then there are options for hedgerow management, HRW2, and then the maintenance and establishment of hedgerow trees, HRW3. And those options can be used in connection with CS capital grants for the creation of hedges and the planting of new hedgerow trees and those things. Again, the detail of this is set out in the SFI handbook, including what's compatible with which other schemes and grants and capital grants and those sorts of things. So those interested should read over the requirements under those actions.
You mentioned earlier about universal actions. Can you explore that a little bit, please?
That's right. So there are these actions that are available across the whole of the holding. And this is probably the most novel feature of the SFI scheme. So one of these actions is SAM1, which is the assessment of the soil on the holding, and then testing of soil organic matter and the preparation of a soil management plan. The soil organic matter in the parcels entered into the action needs to be tested within the last 5 years. So if there's been no testing, then this needs to be done fresh, but existing results that are no older than 5 years can be used. A soil management plan prepared within the last 12 months can also be used to meet the requirements of the scheme here. But again, if there's no existing management plan, if it's going to be older than 12 months, then a fresh one needs to be drawn up. The payment rate of this is £5.80 per hectare entered in, with the additional top up of a flat £95 per holding per year. There's more detail on undertaking the soil testing and the preparation of these management plans in the SFI handbook. Another universal action, not connected to particular land parcels, is NUM1. Under this action, agreement holders receive £589 to have a nutrient management assessment undertaken and then to have a report prepared. So this is an action at the agreement level. You know, we're not looking at particular parcels here. For this action, a FACTS qualified advisor needs to undertake the assessment. They should assess the current nutrient use and needs of the farm, identify and discuss opportunities to increase efficiency, and then help to produce a written nutrient management report. This action, with its requirement for a basis facts qualification, was added to the SFI after having been requested by farmers engaging with the preparation of the scheme. So here we can see a bit of that sort of new feedback process in the development of these schemes as well. And here also, we've got this alignment of improving agricultural productivity and improving the environment. You know, efficient nutrient use is good for both of those. For the universal actions, I think a final key mention goes to the two top-up payments that are available, and those are received per agreement. So there's an additional common land payment of £6.15 per hectare entered into the SFI if a group of two or more people are applying for an agreement on common land. So that's to cover the extra administrative costs of setting up and running these agreements. And there's also what's called the SFI management payment. That's a universal payment, goes to everyone going into the SFI. And that's given to all agreement holders. That's £20 per hectare up to the first 50 hectares entered into the scheme. So capping out at £1,000 annually from that point of view. And again, that's to support the administrative cost of these agreements, weighted slightly towards smaller businesses from that end.
There's quite a lot going on then. Where can people find the full details?
Yeah, so there's a range of options there that are going to be available to most eligible businesses. And a couple of features to get used to as we work into the SFI and the new schemes as they come through. As I've said earlier, DEFRA and the RPA have been working on setting out clear and accessible guidance for these schemes, and things like hosting webinars and blog posts and more of that sort of engagement as well. Now, I doubt listeners have been scribbling down what I've been saying about the actions while I've been running across them. And anyone interested, as I've said already, you know, take a look at the detail of the SFI handbook. Hopefully it's all set out clearly. You know, questions that you've got are answered clearly in there. And as I've said a couple of times, I want to get back to that broad structure of the scheme, and we should always have that in mind when looking at the details. So we've got the actions, and we can choose these pick and mix. Each action has its aim, some requirements, and then the agreement holder's got that flexibility within delivery and record keeping and those sorts of things. An agreement holder should be doing their best to meet those aims of the actions.
I suppose a key question is payment and monitoring.
Yeah, so those who've been managing countryside stewardship agreements or the previous version of the SFI schemes are now going to be familiar with the changed approach here to payment and claims from the schemes. So each year, agreement holders are to submit an annual declaration, supposedly a quick sort of low paperwork process, confirming that they've met their obligations under the agreement. They then need to be keeping records in case they are requested by the RPA, but there's none of that upfront requirement to supply the evidence under the SFI. Payments for the SFI are now quarterly, and their total agreement year payment is going to be split out equally. There's no need to submit a claim to this because of countryside stewardship agreements. You know, instead, these payments are going to be sent out automatically.
So what about the future of the scheme? What's next to come?
Yeah, so thinking about the schemes more broadly, I think the best place to find out about the range of them, about what we know about all of the schemes, not just the SFI, is to look at the DEFRA schemes prospectus that was published in January this year, and we posted that to our website as well. Things can change and they are tweaked, and we've seen this in the change of that structure of SFI. So we had standards and levels and pick and mix actions. However, one perhaps slightly overlooked feature of the agricultural transition is that there's actually quite a bit of consistency with the wider policy here. We've got public money for public goods, something for something, ease of accessibility, outcomes, you know, not prescription, and those sorts of things. And these are all features of policy going back quite a few years now, in particular for the SFI, so we can expect an extended range of actions. From next year, we should also have enhanced countryside stewardship, so we're going to see how these schemes are going to interact. I've talked about things like compatibility and double funding and those sorts of things. It's also been proposed that there's going to be more access to the scheme. So I touched on eligibility earlier. You know, that need to have been BPS eligible in the past, but that's going to be broadened out for next year. Again, we wait to see how this might be staged and what that really means, but more flexibility to access the schemes. So more generally, perhaps more practically, hopefully by the next round of these things, any creases in the application process should have been identified and then ironed out. Those who did countryside stewardship mid-tier this year may have encountered some of the technical issues that were frustrating applications you know, issues with the rural payment service and how the automated system was working. And with luck, as we move forward, things are going to work a bit more smoothly.
There's a lot of information there and good advice for those listening to take a look at the SFI handbook. Do you have any closing pieces of advice for us?
I think here that I just loop back to my couple of starting points from the beginning of our conversation today. Hopefully some of these are a bit clearer now. We've gone over some of the detail of the scheme as well, and we've seen a bit of context to how this looks. So the first is that DEFRA has been working to make schemes a bit more accessible and make the guidance clear, a bit more engagement and those sorts of things. So first things first, take a look at the handbook, you know, keep an eye for any updates. And also keep an eye on things like the DEFRA blog for any updates on webinars and events and other bits of information as well. For those looking to go into the scheme, make sure that land and business details are up to date before an application is opened. You know, this may mean submitting an RLE1 form to update parcels and land use, sort of pump priming the system to get the application through as smoothly as possible. There's this new approach of checks and enforcement, a bit of flexibility, a bit of focus on outcomes, aims, and all those sorts of things. You know, but with that flexibility comes an onus on the agreement holder to try their best to achieve the aims of the outcome and to keep hold of the relevant information for record keeping. I'd also encourage those looking at the scheme to think a bit broader about the wider context of the holding and farm business as well. You know, what does it join up with in terms of the existing farming activities? You know, what are we doing already? You know, what might we be willing to change, happy to change? Does it all stack up? You know, the answer to that question might be that it doesn't, but the answer to that question is that actually it underpins some changes we want to make already, you know, or some changes that we want to make in the long term across the business, going into the next sort of 5 years, 10 years, and moving with the agricultural transition as it comes through.
Thank you, Richard. There is an awful lot to digest in there. And of course, farmers will be able to seek help from their professional advisors. It is great to finally be getting this new scheme rolled out, and CAAV members will be kept up to date with any new developments via the website. There are also, as you mentioned, some useful links available on the podcast page for anyone who's looking to find out more. Richard, thank you once again for joining me.